Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, this is Prem from Team Radio Sai welcoming you. And with me is Arvind. It's been a hot summer, but we have had some really relieving showers, Arvind. And I think we should thank Swami for that. A couple of days back, I think a very, very, vigorous shower, which really relieved us from the heat. But I think it's still not enough. It's again back hot again. You know, it's just reminded of those wonderful summers we used to spend with Swami, that, you know, sitting there, you felt like you're doing so much more to get Swami's darshan.
Exactly. It made sitting in darshan hall a penance.
Penance by itself.
And Swami's arrival, I think we had spoken about this in one of the other satsangs, but I remember for 1 year when Swami did not go to Kodaikanal, in the summer, he sacrificed the car, the comfort and the cool climate inside the car to come for darshan on the moving chair, you know. So it was like really penance bearing fruit. It was summer showers in Prashanthi Nilayam, and Swami would come to give darshan on the wheelchair sofa that was there, and it was so special. And yes, so yesterday, you know, there were two things. One was the rain, and the other thing was the setting sun. Somehow in summers the sun is so much more evident, and it looked so beautiful, the orange disc. And somehow yesterday particularly, even though there was rain in the morning, towards the evening it became so clear, there were no clouds, and till the sun actually sank into the horizon it was seen. I was seeing it as I was traveling. It was so beautiful, and you just can't help but think of Swami, because it's the same color, the same loving orange or saffron. And yes, so the past few days have been beautiful for me, been cooled by the rain, as the same time reminded so much of Swami by the beautiful sun.
And often we tend to think that, you know, Parthi is so hot and India is so hot by itself, but we miss the fact that there is so much of balance in this part of the world. There's so much of balance in the subcontinent. I remember people coming from abroad. We used to have a Lithuanian working with us a couple of years back. He was saying that during the winter months, they have darkness for 4 months. And he said the economy of the country comes down during that time. You know, being in the northernmost part of the globe, they have those, during winters, they are off the sun's rays for nearly 3 months, 4 months.
Naturally, per consumption of electricity, all that goes up.
All that goes up. And he said there's such a gloomy feeling about being there, that, you know, the production comes down, the country's economy starts slumping, people start working lesser. But you look at that here, if it's summer, we have 1 hour extra brightness. If it's winter, we might have half an hour earlier sunset. But that's all it is. You know, there's so much of beautiful balance here. I remember one of my cousins, when he was telling that he was flying from, I think, some part in Europe to India, and it was a morning flight, and he said it's such a refreshing sight when you come past Central Asia, the huge vasts of desert land and dry land, and even as you just enter those, you know, the plains of Punjab, Karachi, Punjab, you know, that the flash of green which greets you makes you feel so very refreshed. I think that is why the subcontinent is very special, and maybe that's why all the avatars chose a land of balance and plenty.
Well, the kind of feeling that your cousin brother felt as he flew over and came into the subcontinent India, I think it will be our attempt today to recreate a feeling of that sort when it comes to our day-to-day life and the pressures that we face in life, the stresses and strains that we face in life. Because today's Afternoon Satsang, we have decided that it should be dedicated to this greatest global killer that we call stress.
Right. Global is the right word. It's universal. I think everybody, once you start stepping out of your infanthood and childhood, you're stepping into this world which is filled with stress.
You know, Prem, just 2 days back when I told you that why don't we do an Afternoon Satsang on stress, there's actually a very very interesting and little story behind why I told that we should do this satsang on stress. Because can you believe it, at that point in time I was in a stressful situation myself. So what happened was, you know, I was called to address about 200 students. These are 15 to 17 year old students who are just exiting high school and entering college. And I was told that you have to give a talk, and I said yes, because I always feel it special and a privilege to speak to students.
I can just imagine your predicament. I'm sure you would have read novels by P.G. Woodhouse. I think there is one book where he, Bertram Wooster, goes to and give a speech to a high school of girls' high school.
Huh.
And he talks of the situation he's in. And I think it's pretty much what you're explaining now.
Yes. You know, the thing was, I'm used to speaking to the students, as you know, but they said that first point, it's not that it is, they're all Sai devotees. I mean, it's just...
Okay, it's a neutral audience.
It's a neutral audience. It's a school. So I said, it's okay. So what's the topic? I mean, the only difference I know is, instead of telling Swami, 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 I replace it with God, God, God. That's it. It's as simple as that. But the next came the shocker. Said, can you speak on stress management? Now, a neutral audience and a neutral topic. I have never... But as I said, you know, everything that comes in life, Swami tells us, you know, you, everything in your life is actually God's gift to you. You know, accept everything as, this is good for me. So that I try my best to follow that policy in life. And so I did not say no. I did not, they asked, do you want a topic change? But I said, no, this is what you have been inspired and you're asking me. So it's fine. So I accepted it. And, you know, I had to speak on stress management to a neutral audience. And the venue, however, was the Sai Center at Indiranagar in Bangalore.
Okay.
And the speaker is coming from Prashanthi Nilayam in Puttaparthi, which means it is very, very clear that the organizers and the authorities in the school want a Swami element in this.
I think it's quite understandable, given what we heard a couple of days back, the results of our school here. You know, and that's something we keep hearing every year.
97% in first class, and I think about
100% in first class, 97% in distinction, I think.
Wow. No, I think that was 87%
in distinction.
And there have been many instances of people scoring 100% and 99% in various subjects.
Right. I think that it would have come from there, because here is a school which is able to manage the stress of students. Because when you talk of high school, 10th standard, 12th standard, the board exams, we've been through that rigor and that grill.
And that period in life, Prem.
And that period in life, right?
Teenage years.
Right.
When all adolescence comes in and it kicks in and turns your body chemistry awry. And there are so many other associated tensions and problems other than just academics.
Right. I think that is why they would have thought that somebody from Prashanthi Nilayam, even for an audience which does not know of Swami, would be the best person to come and talk about stress management, because, I mean, the school is definitely doing something really well which others are not able to do, and I think...
Yeah,
really,
so Prem, you are able to explain it well from the organizer's point of view, not just think from my point of view. Now, what do I go and speak? I have, yes, you know, they say that you have had experience speaking so many times, you do an afternoon satsang, but they're all connected to Swami, and, you know, intuitively I know that stress management and Swami are connected, but I had no idea how, and... Really, I was so stressed, and for 2 days I put in my best efforts, reading through many discourses, you know, going through so many, whatever possible material where I can think of linking Swami's teachings to stress. And as you know, those, you know, Swami has many times given pointers. Nowhere will you see like, okay, today Swami's discourses never used to have a topic. Today is stress management, tomorrow is faith, day after is devotion. It used to not be like that. It's just a discourse, and we have to glean it for the diamond's end. So I had really no idea, and I was so tensed. That night I remember my wife telling me that every time when you get a talk, you accept it as Swami's gift to you. And every time you publicly acknowledge also that it is Swami who speaks through you, then why on earth are you worrying and getting so tensed about it? Just let go, leave it. And definitely, you know, pray to Swami, have faith in Swami. This is what was the message I got. So next day morning, when I woke up, no, I had not got any speech or anything. Means no miracle had happened overnight. But I just was thinking over these words, and I thought that definitely if I'm getting fearful, it's because I'm feeling I have to do something for which I am not prepared. And this is against my principle of faith in Swami. So let me place my faith in Swami. And how do I place my faith in Swami? By making a commitment. I just decided, this was on Tuesday, you know, Wednesday, yesterday was the talk. and today is Thursday, why not make stress management the topic for a Thursday live? And, you know, that is how I just told you that, and you were asking me, okay, have you got any thoughts on this? And I said, yes, yes, I have got a very good structure ready. That was my faith speaking, not my knowledge or not, it was not as if I had anything. And what actually happened after that, maybe we will tell it at 2 o'clock. So till then we have our listeners listening to what we have got to discuss on stress. And that's a beautiful ending and lesson, dear listeners. And we will come to that towards the end of the satsang. But today we will take up stress, different facets of stress. What is stress? Why do we get stressed? And what are the symptoms of stress? What are the problems associated with stress? How many kinds of stress are there? And what we should do to overcome stress? And how Swami's teachings so beautifully help us in leading a peaceful and stress-free life? That shall be the endeavor of this satsang. And before we begin that, we seek Swami's blessings so that He speaks through us and inspires all of us.
Talking about stress, and when you go into a discussion on stress, I think one of the first things which come to our mind is stress good or bad?
Mm.
Because most often, you know, when it comes, we're talking about school and the stress we go through in preparing for exams in school, I think more or less it is understood that you have to be put under pressure to do your best. You know, that is the logic with which the problem is being approached. So it is said that let us give you stress, let us give you, you know, there is a deadline, there is an exam coming, and there is this pressure on you, and then you perform.
Mm.
So it is kind of accepted that stress is a good thing. But is that true? Is it really something which we need to approach it that way?
You know, when we think whether stress is good or bad, it's all about is fats, for example, fats. Fats, is it good or bad? We had discussed this during our Sealing on Desires satsang, where we realized that man is a limited company. It is not whether something is good or bad. Anything in excess is bad, and anything in moderation is good. That is what we had concluded in that satsang, and I think that holds good even to stress also. You know,
in other words, you can say that anything which is unnaturally manipulated and is or put in place there could be, in a sense, be said it's wrong.
Yes,
bad.
You know, stress, however it might be coming, whether it's coming naturally or in an unnatural, manipulated way, as you say, to a limited amount, stress is good. You know, stress is good, as you say. One is it helps you focus and achieve results. It helps you to attain your goal at a faster rate because all your energies are focused on it. For instance, you know, when we look at the kind of tests that Swami puts us, subjects us to, when we say tests are Swami's taste, we see this happening, you know, where Swami subjects us to some kind of a stress, and that stress actually brings out the best in us. Now, this may seem like a spiritual thing, but even day-to-day things, for example, when we go to a fun fair, when we go to a entertainment place like SL World in Mumbai, which is, or Disneyland, Disney World, when we go there, when we sit on a roller coaster,
mm-hmm.
A roller coaster is nothing but a stress. It's a stress where, you know, you get your heart pumping, your blood pressure goes up, and you're red in the face, and you're screaming, there's an adrenaline rush. It is a stress, but it's enjoyable. So you see, for 5-10 minutes, stress is fun. It's good. In fact, we pay to get that stress. Stress becomes a problem only when it is there in excess amounts. I think now we have actually jumped the gun and, you know, come to the thing that little amounts of stress are good and entertaining and fun. Too much of stress is bad. Before that, what exactly is this stress? Stress has different physical manifestations, different mental and physiological manifestations. But do you know, stress has been developed by nature because it is good for us. Isn't that shocking to hear that?
Right. I mean, it is shocking, but I think that was what I was trying to say, that which is natural might still be good.
Mm.
You know, when you talk of stress, there is a natural ability we have to get stressed. So I think when we get it pushed too much, that is a problem. So I think it is very important to go to see the natural origins of stress, and you know, in a environment where stress is a very natural outcome.
You know, there's a scientist, his name is Robert Sapolsky, a British scientist, and he has spent a lot of time studying stress in humans, in animals. So
must have a very stressful life.
No, he's having a very stress-free life.
Right. I think that is a very important thing, Arvind, because the idea why we are looking at stress today is if stress could be understood better, we can definitely control it and handle it better.
I think this scientist's work will definitely help us understand what stress is. You know, he says, suppose you go to the African continent and you are in the Maasai Mara in Kenya. And there is this lion attacking a zebra.
Okay.
And the zebra has to now run for its life, else the lion will catch hold of it. Now tell me, which animal do you think is stressed? The zebra or the lion?
Yeah, I think emotionally or psychologically the zebra should be more stressed, right?
Yes, but that is what it appears, because we feel that the zebra is running for its life.
Right.
But you know, the truth is, the zebra and the lion both are equally stressed. Why? Because both are having the same common goal. The zebra is, in the next 10 minutes, if I don't run for my life, I am dead. And the lion feels, in the next 10 minutes, if I don't hunt down my food, I am also dead, because I don't have food. You know, there are great dangers that a lion faces. The way nature is made and the way our videos are made, we always think that when a lion is hunting a zebra, it's the zebra that is in danger and the lion is supreme. We have no idea about the pressures and dangers that the lion undergoes. For instance, if when trying to chase, you know, just imagine you walking into a pack of 10 dogs. In Parthi, it often happens at night, 10 o'clock. It's so scary, right? Now imagine instead of 10 dogs, if there are 100 dogs. Now imagine 100 horses or 100 donkeys. Now imagine 100 zebras which are wild. It is really a scary thing even for a lion to go into a herd of zebras. And do you know, a kick from a zebra is so much more powerful. It can, if it lands it on the head of the lion is dead. If it lands it on the jaw of the lion, which will most probably be the case because the lion is trying to catch hold of it, it can break its jaw. And you know, a lion has no dentist to treat it. It's as good as dead if the jaw is broken, because it can't hunt and it's over. It doesn't have old age homes in the wild, and that's it. It's the survival of the fittest over there, and it dies out. So the lion also has all these stresses. I mean, I have to take care that nothing happens to me, my body is fit and fine, and yet I catch my food, and all this just for food. It's just doing it for food. So basically, both the lion and zebra are stressed. When we say it is stressed, what does it mean? Now, let's go to the zebra's angle. The zebra has to run for its life.
Right.
So it has to go at its top speed and its best maneuvering ability.
Right.
So what its body does is, the muscles need energy. And therefore, for the muscles to need energy, the way to supply it is via the blood. So the blood needs to be oxygenated in the lungs, which means the lungs have to work overtime. And the energy has to be carried by the blood, which means the blood pressure has to be high, so that, you know, the rate of flow of blood is high. So blood pressure goes up. In order for the blood pressure to go up, the heart has to beat faster. Now this is what happens directly. Indirectly, what happens, other things that happen is, now this is the logic that the body's CPU processes. This is how it thinks. It thinks that, you know what, now I'm going to shut down everything. When you are stressed, you won't feel hungry.
Right.
Because the body, because you know, stress is caused by the secretion of two hormones. One is adrenaline, and the other is that whole group of hormones are called glucocorticoids.
Okay.
So glucocorticoids and adrenaline get released in the blood to do all this. You know, these are the chemical messengers which get released when you are stressed, and these are called as the flight or fight hormone, which means these hormones get released either when you have to fight, like the lion, or when you have to flight, when you have to run away, like the zebra. So these are released in life and death situations. So in life and death situations, the body logic is, what is the use of making you feel hungry and feed when you may not be alive after the next 10 minutes? So first, let us live for the next 10 minutes. After that, you can think of food. So it shuts down your digestive system. Okay. Apart from that, same thing happens with your reproductive system. I mean, this is not the time to think of mates and, you know, think about the one you love when you come to humans, or when you go to animals, think about your mate. Reproductive system shuts down. You know, in fact, the immune system also shuts down.
Mm-hmm.
The immune system, all the systems.
I think all the systems which would require energy to function, because immune system and these are all high intensity energy requiring systems. I think it's more or less something like an emergency situation in a country when there is wartime.
Yes, and the emergency is such frame that it's not only the energy intense systems that shut down. Any system that is non-essential, non-essential for that escape. Only those systems which I need to run with all speed and with good maneuvering, only those systems are kept active. And every other system shuts down. Okay, when this shuts down, this is what happens in a stressful situation. Because you have to survive the next 10 minutes. The same thing happens for the lion too. And after the hunt is over, there's one zebra that died and the lion is satisfied. So the lion's stress comes down to zero. All other zebra's stress come down to zero and it's all back to normal. So this is the physiology of stress. The problem nowadays with humans is that though stress was given as a mechanism in life and death situations, we seem to be making life and death situations out of everything in life. And that is the reason for this chronic stress. For example, you know, when I was giving this talk yesterday, mm-hmm. even before I began the talk, I just randomly called out to one boy. I told him, come here. He came to me on the stage. I just thrust the mic in front of him and said, for the next 5 minutes, just tell me what you know about stress. And I stood looking at him directly in the eye, and he's facing everybody, and he's like, he started stammering. He lost his ability to speak coherently. He started sweating. And you know, that is what, nothing, it's clearly the symptoms of stress, right? Can you believe it? Today, public speaking has become life or death situation for us. An examination is life or death situation for us. A penalty shootout in a football match is a life and death situation for us. We get stressed in all these situations, and therefore our life has become one continuous stress after another. Therefore, stress is not bad by itself. It is given in order to overcome a life and death situation. The problem lies in the way we are leading our lifestyles, making life and death situations out of everything that we face in life.
I think that is the thing, you know, where when you look at the animal kingdom, or when you, the example which was taken by these, I think he's a British scientist, right?
Yeah.
If you look at that, he took the most simple system, where the number of situations which are available are very few. You know, if you take an animal, it's about, as Swami says, it's about finding a mate, finding food, and being on top of the pack. That's all that matters. Mm. So there are only three varieties of stress it can have. But if you look at man, the way Swami says that the way man's life has progressed, there's so many situations. So there's one concept of stress which has had to be modified and used for all these situations. So I think the ability to find the right amount of stress for the right amount of situation you are in will be the best challenge for all of us.
And it's a challenge, and we should also be inspired to reduce stress. And in order to help in that inspiration, we can just have a peep at the negative effects of stress. You know, that will really shock us. For example, apart from what I already said, there is this part of the brain called the hippocampus.
Mm-hmm.
The hippocampus is what is responsible for our memory and learning. They have found out that stress apparently shuts down the hippocampus too. Because when you're trying to, you know, when you're trying to run away from the lion and save your life, why do you need to learn or unlearn anything? Why do you need to use your memory? It's not a time when you have to get nostalgic or go down memory lane. So it just shuts it down. If you become more practical, that is what we see happening, you know. You don't study well for your examinations, or you don't prepare well for your presentation, whatever. And the last minute you do an overnight. You spend 10 hours at a stretch studying it. Next day morning, you go to your examination, you go to your presentation, you face your boss, you're just blank. Blank. It is not actually your fault. It was simply because you were so stressed. your hippocampus was not functioning. You were stressed because you had to do it. It was like a life and, it is a life and death. Tomorrow if I mess up my presentation, I may get kicked out, I lose my salary, I lose my job, and I'm not able to support my wife and children. I mean, it's all, the way we start thinking about consequences, my preparation for the presentation tomorrow or for the examination tomorrow in itself becomes a life and death situation. And in that life and death situation, we are actually not helping ourselves. I see, that is what happened when I was also preparing for my talk on stress, you know. I got so stressed that I am not able to come up with any kind of thoughts or ideas that in any normal circumstance, any normal person would have come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Because stress shuts down the hippocampus. Stress, we already said, you know, shuts down the immune system. This was also noticed, you know, when decades ago, one of the first ever diseases that were attributed to stress was ulcers in the stomach.
Okay.
So, you know, when doctors started saying that this is ulcers in the stomach is because you are leading a stressful life, people would take it as an insult because it's so uncool to be stressed. So you are stressed, but you don't want to appear stressed. That was when they discovered that actually there is this bacteria that is causing ulcers in the stomach. So the people rejoiced. They said, you doctors, you are trying to fool us and telling us stress and all that. It's just a bacteria. So just give me a pill to end this ill. And that is what happened. The pills were made and the bacteria, and that is how stomach peptic ulcers were being solved with pills. Later research revealed that 90 to 95% of the people carry these bacteria in the stomach. And yet it is only a microscopic minority and an increasing minority nowadays that is suffering from peptic ulcers. And then they found the reason was, the minute a person is stressed, his immune system shuts down and these bacteria, which are actually friends in the stomach, become attackers and they are able to damage the stomach lining, causing peptic ulcers. So though they were not aware, it is actually stress that was resulting in peptic ulcers. Apart from that, you know, I can go on and on many things. They have, a research done in Holland has revealed that stress affects the unborn fetus. The parents who were subjected to the Nazi war onslaught in Holland during the Second World War, their children are showing all these effects of a stressed person, of having a higher BP, of having a faster heart rate, of having blockages in their arteries.
I think everything stems from that particular concept that you said, where the system tries to optimize the energy utilization by shutting out processes. I think one of the other obvious fallout of stress is obesity. You know, people who are in a very stressful life tend to put on weight. I think it again comes from the fact that your system thinks that, let me cut down on the digestion, let me cut down on the utilization.
Naturally, because when you want energy,
breaking down of the fats.
Energy, best way is to digest glycogen, glucose, right. Sugar. Why should I do fat? Fat is a longer process to get energy. So stop fat metabolism.
Right.
And the dangerous thing, Prem, is they have found that when fat metabolism stops, the first place, you know where it accumulates?
Okay. In the belly.
Yes. The worst place. Belly fat is the worst kind of fat, and that is where it accumulates. That leads to a whole host of other, you know, problems.
Right. I think that's also because of there are some people who tend to eat more when they are stressed. I used to have a couple of classmates like that. Exam times they would eat more. You know, there are some people, the more they get depressed, the more they will eat. And yes, the more your system is actually not ready to digest
fat
or break down fat. So that is again leading to that cholesterol formation. And
you know, I also know one or two people who say that, you know, when they get stressed, they eat. And eating solves their problem. Maybe when we talk about solutions to stress, we will come to this. Another thing that happens because of stress, and maybe we'll stop at this because there's no end. Stress is one of the greatest killers because it causes more than 100 to 150 kinds of diseases and health problems. One more thing that happens is the telomeres. Telomeres are nothing but caps which hold the chromosomes together so that it forms the DNA. You know, the chromosomes, there are 46 chromosomes in the human body.
Right.
They have to be held together by a cap. At the end, the ends, the two ends, there are caps, just like how you hold the broomstick in a broom together.
Mm-hmm.
These telomeres, they are constantly eroded and they are constantly reconstructed by an enzyme called telomerase.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is, during times of stress, the erosion rate becomes faster than the building up rate of the telomerases. It also suppresses the enzyme telomerase stress, that is adrenaline and glucocorticoids. Okay, because what is the actual function of telomerase, why it builds it up is, the minute the cap erodes and the chromosomes open up, that is a sign of decay, old age and death.
Aging.
Aging.
Okay.
So, aging happens when you are stressed, and when it's 10 minutes, 15 minutes, the body does not worry, because who cares whether you live for 85 or 80, because you may die in the next 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So let me save you, no problem if I age a bit. But when we take constant stress, we start aging. And this I saw, one of my classmates, you know, Satish Narayan, he was narrating to me how once when he was sitting for Darshan in Vrindavan, he saw a white haired man, probably in his 60s, sit mm-hmm. next to him. And that man started talking to him about his profession. Apparently, he was an investment banker. And
understandably. Okay.
And he said he had a very stressful life.
Mm-hmm.
And he told my classmate that stress is what makes you age faster. And mm-hmm. then he told him, can you guess my age? You know, having been taught in the Satya Sai system of education, being courteous and polite, he simply told him, sir, you look like 49 or 50. When he was sure that he looked something like 60, and the person responds, see, this is what I mean by saying stress makes you aged. I'm 36-year-old. A 36-year-old appearing like a 60-year-old. And, you know, that is what happens. So, there are a host of problems that come because of stress.
I think, you know, what you've said is all the physiological and the biological things. But understandably, when you say that your thinking reduces, your ability to recollect from past experience reduces. You know, all
decision-making reduces.
Right, decision-making reduces. That's why they say don't make decisions in panic.
Hmm.
Which means every other activity which you do which requires your full attention, you are endangering yourself when you're involving yourself in these activities in stress. When you're driving a car in traffic, when you're in stress, I mean, you're putting yourself in danger. When you're walking on the road,
in danger.
Right, when you're walking on the road, when you're in stress, you're a pedestrian, you're walking in a, you know, a heavy traffic region. All these things, you know, there might be people working in industry, in the factories, if they're stressed, if they're doing activities which are very dangerous and which need your full attention. These are all things where you're not biologically putting yourself in danger, but having stress, having the biological conditions which stress create in you, you're actually endangering yourself.
Exactly. So, you know, I think we will take a pause now from the effects of stress, because more or less people would have experienced it, people would have seen it, and people would have known it. It is just in order to make a brief recap of all the problems, in order to show how important it is that we learn how to manage stress, that we did this. So dear listeners, in case you have got stressed out listening to this continuous hammering on stress, it's time to relax with this little musical interlude, because you know music definitely calms jangled nerves. After this, we will go into the causes for stress and how Swami gives beautiful solutions for each of these causes. And the beauty of Swami's solutions is that they're not symptomatic. They're not at the surface. They go to the deep root and right. pluck out stress once and for all.
मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना साही मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी अखिया, तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी, जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साईं मेरे, जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साईं मेरे, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना। छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले, तेरी छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले, नयन कमल मन मोहक मादक रंजित है अधरारे, तेरी छवि अति सुंदर केश ये है घुंघराले निराले, इस छवि को हम मन में भर कर तेरे गुण को गाए, तेरे गुण को गाए, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना। तेरे बिना जग माया काए, बंधन टूट न पाए, तेरे बिना जग माया काए, बंधन टूट न पाए, जीवन नैया पग पग डोले, जीवन या पग पग डोले, तू ही पार लगाए, तेरी शरण में लेके प्रभु तू कृपा शांति बरसाए, कृपा शांति बरसाए, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे, तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी अखिया, तेरे दर्शन की प्यासी, जीवन ज्योत जला साई मेरे, जीवन ज्योत जलाओ साई मेरे, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना रे, मन मेरो लागे ना तेरे बिना।
इंटरेस्टिंगली अरविंद, दैट सॉन्ग व्हिच वी प्लेड जस्ट अ कपल ऑफ डेज बैक टॉकिंग टू one of our alumni, Sonam sir.
Okay.
He was telling how this song was composed. They had a particular deadline and the song was given to him and, you know, he had to compose it. He said, he was in immense stress in trying to compose it. And we're saying that how till he was in such stress, the song would just not come out at all.
Oh, okay.
And then of course he said that something else happened. There was a little change of perspective after which the song came. Maybe that we can save it for later, because that becomes a solution of how to handle stress. But okay, he did show that in that stress, even the composer we know, Sonam sir, some of the best bhajans has come
Sai
from
Om,
him.
Sai Om, Sai Om, Sai Om.
Some of the best songs have come from him. But he said that when he had that deadline to meet him and there was that stress, he couldn't compose that song.
And that should be possibly a lesson to all the bosses and leaders among our listeners out there, that though a little amount of stress is good, too much of stress, you're actually killing your employees and your team members.
Right, it's killing creativity.
It's better to give them a little free rein. Okay, so coming back to stress.
Right, talking about stress, you know, when we talk of stress, the example which you gave, the study which was done on a zebra and a lion, and the stress which we face in life every day. You know, when you're in a career which is a stressful career, let's say you spoke about an investment banker. You know, that's about prolonged stress, a life which is where every day there is stress, and there is stress for every day of over many years.
Like career, it can happen like in relationships.
And that is what they say, even the investment bankers, most of them, they all take voluntary retirement at the age of 45, 50. One thing is they've earned enough. That's one part of it. The second part of it is because the life is so stressful, aging is faster, that you have to take early retirement.
So actually it's not early retirement. You're retiring at a physiological age of 60, right. Though your body is only 45.
Right.
Hmm.
So I think stress can be, and it is of course divided into two types of stress. They say one is acute stress. That is when you talk of stress being a good thing, where you are put in a situation where you need to react in the manner you would react under stress. That is acute stress, like when you're in a life and death situation, or when you're in the middle of the road and suddenly something is coming to hit you. You know, the reflex which you show is what you show under stress. There is immense stress and your body makes you react under that stress. Those are moments of acute stress, but the problem which we want to deal with and what we want to discuss about is chronic stress, where you live a life which is filled with stress, or you are a person who is prone to stress in every situation.
You know, putting it in a comparative scale, acute stress is mostly good, sometimes it may go bad. Chronic stress is bad. Nowadays we have many cases of acute chronic stress, you know, where you're under acute stress for long periods of time,
right,
because of either your career or your relationships, various causes, but you are under acute chronic stress, and that is what leads to all the problems we discussed before. And you know, when you go onto the internet and just search for results on how to battle stress, the most common things that come are, you know, go and indulge in your hobby, or take a shower.
Right, that's a very common thing.
You know, play with your pets, chat with your friends, you know, start exercising. Exercise is offered as a very good solution.
Go
for a jog, or anything, play tennis, whatever you like. Get a body massage done, you know, relax your muscles. I feel, you know, when you relax your muscles, it's actually combating the stress, because stress tenses your muscles, so you're relaxing your muscles. So these are usually the suggested solutions for a stress. You can check it. Most of the time, these are it. There are, of course, others. We will come to them. But I wanted to mention these because these look like very easy solutions which you can jump onto quickly.
Even as you say this, it's very obvious. These are all methods of saving that moment or releasing the stress at that moment. You are in a stressful situation, and that is having a certain impact on your body and mind. How to release your body and mind of that stress? You know, it's like a story which I read sometime back. You know, one guy goes to the doctor and he tells him that, "Doctor, I'm having stomach pain." And the doctor says, "Stomach pain, okay, take these pills." So then the stomach pain subsides the next day. He goes away. After 2 days, he again comes back and he says, "Doctor, I'm having a headache now." So the man picks up another couple of pills and the doctor says, "Have this, you'll be fine. The headache is again solved." And then after some time, he comes back and he says, "There's another problem, doctor, this is what." So every time the doctor gives him pills, it is settled. But something or the other keeps coming. So then he goes to another doctor. And he says, "Doctor, I'm having stomach pain." So the doctor says, "You're having stomach pain? Why should you have a stomach pain?" So he asks, "Do you have any other pains relating to this? Do you have any other pain?" So he says, "I have a headache also." Then he says, "I'm having this also." So he puts all these three together and he says, "Okay, if you're having all this, then you're having acidity. So take this medicine." So the first one was a bad doctor. The second was a good doctor. The difference is, the first doctor was treating the symptoms. But the second doctor was looking at the symptoms and saying that, where does the symptom arise from? Let's treat that.
Beautiful point, Prem, because when we say we play with a pet, it's a stress buster. A cat is a stress buster. Or if I go and play shuttle badminton, it's a stress buster. Or if I hear to music, it is still something that is taking my mind away from...
What is the thing causing stress?
Stress. So maybe it is useful in times of acute stress. But what do you do in times of chronic stress? What if my career is stressing me? What if my job, work life is stressing me? I can't keep listening to music every 20 minutes, nor can I take my pet dog to office.
Right.
What do you do in terms of chronic stress? So, as you rightly said, it is very important that, you know, these are good. It's not that listening to music is bad or playing with your pet is bad. They're all good. Playing, exercising, you doing yoga, all these are good. They help in alleviating the symptoms, which are fantastic in themselves. You know, when you alleviate the symptom itself, you feel much better. So it is good. But that is only temporary for that moment. It is time to, now for us to delve to the roots to solve the problem there, so that we will not have dependence on music or our pets in the future.
And another fallout of depending on these temporary releases of your stress is that it makes you more restless. You know, you see people, they'll be listening to music. Then after some time, they go and do something else. Then they do something else. You know, when you're in stress, you're trying out different things, trying to see which is helping you get your stress, remove the stress off your shoulders. But you end up doing so many things, you are becoming more restless. That's something which we see in most people, you know. They don't know what is going to remove the stress. So they try out all the symptomatic cures. And in the process, they become more restless, do many things, and they're not focused.
And that is the worst case scenario.
Right.
In the best case scenario, though they may actually get relaxed and not suffer those symptoms, it is, as you rightly said, it is only for that time. And again, when it comes, you'll have to again go to it.
Right.
It's like treating the symptoms. So that is the best case. The best case scenario is repeated use. The worst case scenario is no peace.
Right.
Now, to go to the root, let us again go back to our scientist, Robert, whom we spoke about. Robert Sapolsky. His study on baboons did a study on baboons in the Masai Mara. And you know, he says that his study consisted of two sets.
Apart from this study on the
baboons,
the prey and the predator.
Prey and predator is just a side study. Just to explain about, his entire study was on baboons for 30 years. And along with that, for a few years, he studied British parliamentarians.
That's an interesting sample.
I'm quoting him when I say that the baboons and British parliamentarians show similar behavior. I mean, and what is the similar behavior he's talking about, which is linked to stress, which is really very amazing. Now, he saw that these baboons, they need about 7 to 8 hours every day to fulfill their daily requirements of food, drink, procreation and other things. Whatever daily needs to be done.
Okay.
After that, the free time, what do they do? Baboons bully each other. You know, there's a baboon sitting there. The other baboon goes, simply pulls its tail. This baboon squeaks, turns back, tries to fight. One of them is stronger than the other naturally.
Okay.
So the bully bullies the guy that gets bullied.
Mm-hmm.
Now the bullied has got so much of frustration and anger pent up, doesn't know what to do, goes and finds some other baboon bullyable by it, bullies that baboon, and so a kind of pecking order gets established.
Okay.
And incidentally, they have observed that this happens predominantly among males, very little among females. Because females, why that is also given a reason, they are more busy tending to the young ones, and we will come to that later, but it happens mostly among the males, and there's a pecking order. So you have a top baboon who, say, let us, baboons usually exist in packs of about 40-45. Let us say there are about 15 males. So you have the top baboon who can bully 14 other males.
Mm-hmm.
and can get himself groomed, massaged and cleaned by any of these 14. Because if they don't do it, he's going to slap them. He's going to pull their tail. He's going to hang them upside down. Similarly, the second baboon has got to serve and care for the top baboon, mm-hmm. but he can get seva done to himself from the remaining 13 baboons.
Okay.
And so the pecking order goes. Finally, you have baboon number 15, whose whole life is engaged in seva, seva, seva of the other 14 baboons on top.
Okay.
And the 15th baboon lives in constant stress because any baboon can bully it.
Come and bully it, okay.
And that's what he found in his scientific analysis of the blood of these baboons. The alpha male baboon, that is baboon 1.
Right.
Baboon 1 had beautiful blood reports. No blood pressure, no problems. The arteries are not clogged. The heart rate is fantastic. The rhythm is fantastic. Everything is beautiful. On the other hand, baboon 15 has blocked arteries. It has got a greater chance for getting greater risk of cardiovascular diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Its breathing is faster. Its blood pressure is faster. It'll age faster. And according to Sapolsky, the 15th baboon has a much shorter lifespan compared to the alpha male baboon.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, with these, that is what I said, British Parliament. He took up the British Parliament because there are clear levels, you know, level 1, level 2. There are people with level 3 clearance, level 5 clearance.
Okay.
And there are different levels, you know, and the top level is the top guy.
Mm-hmm.
He found a similar pattern of stress in this British hierarchy also. The top person has less stress, very nice blood. It shows physically, it shows in the blood report. While the person on, he did it with the person on the level 7. And level 7 person, he confesses that, you know, out of the blue, the boss says that I have to do this. And this was the night when I was planning to spend with my children, but I could not. I have to sit out whole night. And he's taking a leave. I can't take an off. I have to do that. And you know, nowadays, that's why you see in the Western countries, they come up with more and more legal reforms where they say that you can't work beyond this, only these many hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
These are all labor laws. And we have them. Labor laws are to protect those who are lower in the hierarchy.
Low in the pecking order.
Yes, low in the pecking order. Otherwise, they get pecked to death. So, one of the causes for stress, very important this is, he says, is depending on your position in the hierarchy. The higher you are, the less stressed you are. The lower you are, more stressed you are.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
It's interesting. At the same time, it also brings a question as to...
The most stupidest conclusion one could draw from this is, you want to battle stress, become a better bully.
Become a better bully. That's what it looks like.
Right.
Okay, or go to the top. And that's what we see happening in the world. Everyone wants to be on top. Reach the top. You know, that is so... At the same time, you know, Prem, is it that every CEO of every company is having a stress-free life? Is it that every person who is bottom in the pecking order, for example, Prem, you and me, we are in the bottom of the pecking order if we take our organization here. Are you stressed? Am I stressed? I don't know. I can definitely speak for you, but because what I've seen for you, I don't think you are stressed.
I think none of us here are stressed in that case, right?
None of us are stressed. So then how do you explain this then? Again, you know, there is one thing. In a baboon, a hierarchy is formed only by bullyability. But you know, humans are not baboons. That is where we distinguish ourselves. We are not just baboons. We are something much more. And we are part of multiple hierarchies. For example, a person may just be a bottom rung worker in an organization. But he is the father and the head of the family at home.
Right.
So you see, and if he is able to give importance to his family more than what he gives to his work, well, he's fine. He's stress-free because he is on top of the hierarchy for which he gives importance. Then what about a person who is neither a father at home nor a... He might be, for example, the captain of the baseball team. So though he is lower in the hierarchy, he is now the most important person when it comes to baseball, when they play baseball. And so he's on top of the hierarchy there. So, Sapolsky concludes saying that it's not only about your career hierarchy. It's about the hierarchy that you give importance to. And therefore, if you are on top of any one of the hierarchies, you are having a stress-free life.
Right. And I think even in the career hierarchy, you will have your own peer groups. If you're working in a company, you'll have your own peer groups where you would be an important person there. You know, there, as you said, multiple ways of forming hierarchies within this hierarchy and you being in the top of some pecking order in, you know, within that hierarchy.
And
so that makes it all the more complex than the baboon society.
But that also brings up a problem, Prem, that it may happen. It can happen. Why not? It's nothing to be ashamed of that we are not on top of any of the hierarchies. You know, it happens to majority. It's not possible that you are the best in something. It may just not happen. What do you do then? That is, you know, that is where I feel so beautifully that Swami and God comes in. Yesterday, I mean, this is not presented in scientific journals, and the scientific analysis is so brilliant that it helps us to see the scientific rationale behind things that Swami says.
Right.
Now, let us take this case of praying when we pray. What happens when we pray? I'm talking of an ideal prayer.
Mm-hmm.
An ideal prayer is nothing but a conversation with God. And who is God? God is the most powerful, most beautiful, most loving force in the entire universe. I'm calling him God. I either call him Satya Sai Baba, or I call him Rama or Krishna. I call him consciousness. You call him by any name. You call him the Great Spirit. You know, the Native American Indians call their God as Wakantanka, the Holy Spirit. So you call Atma, the Holy Spirit, God, whatever. We are talking about that same loving and most powerful force in the universe. And prayer is conversation with that loving, powerful force. Now just imagine the beauty of prayer. If we are able to have prayer in our day-to-day lives, the most powerful, most important, supreme, grandest, greatest force in the universe is dedicating time for me. How wonderful and great it makes me feel. Because I am now in communion with that grand force. Such a sense of importance. It builds in automatically, intuitively, from within, without any external. And so when I am very serious about my prayers, when I say no distractions, there may be a guest waiting, but no. You know, people who are strict about their prayers, they don't care if food is waiting. They don't care if a guest is waiting. That in itself shows how important the prayer is, and you have all these people waiting and all these things waiting, but yet you are giving attention to prayer. That in itself, you know, in a way makes you on top of the hierarchy because you are in communion with the greatest force in the universe who is really directly in front of you waiting upon you. Wow. What a way to achieve being on top of the hierarchy through a simple thing such as daily prayer.
Right. And the other thing, which of course one is prayer, what Swami says is what you think you are. You know, we often are so fixed with the idea that I am this personality in this part of the hierarchy. But what Swami says is that don't associate yourself with this body and this
mind,
you know, mind which you are. Swami is saying there is something else in you which is God himself is there in you, and associate yourself with that.
You are Amritasya Putra,
right.
Swami says.
So you are from wherever you are in that hierarchy or pecking order, you're being taken straight to the top of the thing and says you are there. So that should be the most perfect way to get rid of all your stress, you know, given the baboon analogy of that, right?
Exactly. So,
but since that is the most difficult thing, like, you know, if when you talk of that, you're talking of self-realization, and then there's no concept of stress and handling stress. But in the case of our inability to do that, which is the most perfect way, I think there are so many other ways of handling it.
Like. Yes, and one is prayer. The other thing is, you know, when we say that we are in, when we sit on the seashore and watch the ocean, when we see nature, we feel so good, the stress goes off. Why does it happen? I feel when you see the expansiveness of the ocean, and when you see the grandeur of nature, you know, maybe the nature might be just your own garden. You may not see it as very huge, But see the grandeur of nature. You see how the tree is in touch with the earthworms, is in touch with the birds, how it's one complex system, everybody working towards a common goal and everybody supporting each other. And it's such a very, very complex system when we see nature. In light of that expanse, in light of that complexity, you realize that you are nothing but one, just one small entity, that's all. One more cog in the wheel, that's all. And that sort of, you know, brings a leveling effect. If I'm a cog in the wheel, so is my boss, so is my father, so is my mother, so is... Everybody are just cogs in the wheel. All of us, it's only our own mental creation that somebody is high, somebody is low in the hierarchy. All are one in the hierarchy. And that is why actually being attuned to nature also brings about a kind of leveling where it de-stresses you.
Right.
So to overcome, so just summarizing what we spoke till now, to overcome this hierarchical cause of stress, the best way is to be attuned to nature, and the other one is being attuned to God, because God is grander than nature, and daily prayer. So daily prayer becomes very, very important, and now we realize why our, you know, ancestors, our parents tell us, you spend some time praying daily. We think that, what is the use of praying? I mean, God can hear. No, it is very important that you give it importance. Because when you give importance to prayer, you're giving importance to yourself. It is very important that you set aside 20 minutes every day, or 15 minutes, or half an hour every day. Only, no, nothing else is more important than this. This is the most important. And when you give importance to God, you're giving importance to yourself, which puts you on top of a hierarchy, which ensures that you do not get stressed by any other situations that arise elsewhere.
It's a very important point which you said, that we feel ourselves part of something. And the idea of feeling ourselves as part of something means that there is a reason to all the madness you're going through. And I think that is a very, very a thing which gives you a lot of solace. When you know that, yes, there is confusion, there is chaos, but there is some kind of method in this madness which somebody is controlling. That's what you feel when you see nature. When you're in the middle of something, you realize that I am a part of this huge mechanism. Hmm. And so is everything that is happening in my life.
And when you say that, you know, we know that there is somebody in charge of this, you know, that is another beautiful facet. That is actually what gave me the solution, you know. When you have faith in God, and therefore you surrender to Him. You know, surrender is such a powerful de-stressing agent. We often take it for granted. You know, in my case also, when my wife told that and I said, this is what I'm doing, I just decided, Swami, that is it. And I really let go of it. And Swami says very clearly in the prayer of surrender, He says, when you say you're surrendered to me, you must stop thinking about it completely. Do your best and leave the rest to God. That is what surrender is all about. So you have to stop thinking about it completely. We often, you know, we tell Swami to take over, but we don't give up. And you know, there are two aspects to surrender. The first aspect is you have to do your best. You simply can't throw away your hand and say, Swami, do it. You do your best. After that, you stop thinking about it. And that is exactly what happened, because the next day when I, you know, came to office and I just googled for stress and some random 10 keywords I put, I don't remember them now. The first link is what gave me the skeleton of my entire talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the solution that you were speaking about even when you told about Brother Sonam.
Right, that song which he wrote, exactly that's what he said, because he said as long as he was trying to get that song and get that tune composed, that song wouldn't come at all. And the moment he said that, Swami, it's never been the case that I've composed. It's always been that you have composed it through me.
Mm.
And when he said that, and when he gave in completely, as you said in your case, you know, he just went and he said, I'm not going to think about the song anymore. And then it just took him 5 minutes for him to compose the whole song.
The whole song. So beautiful, see? Because the minute you're de-stressed, all your mechanisms start back again and you are able to function better. You have a problematic colleague in office or you have a problematic boss. Everybody feels their boss is the worst, you know, in the world. And when you're having that, when you surrender, yes, it doesn't mean that you don't do your best effort. You put in your best efforts to please the boss and you try your best to explain to him your situation. After that, if you feel he's not doing, there's no use of fretting and fuming. At that time, Swami says surrender means to be able to give it to God and then realize that whatever happens is for your good. Am I able to do that? am I able to then just say that, okay, Swami is in charge, let me not worry. There should be no thoughts of my boss coming at all to me. And how am I sure that it will help? You try it out. That's what I will tell to anybody who asks me that, because I can cross my heart and stand and tell anybody that I have tried it out on numerous instances, and without fail, every time it has worked. So you just try it out. Try the magic of surrender. That is the magic and beauty of God. That is the magic of Swami. Just try it once. Put in your best effort and then tell Swami it's in your hands. And I don't want to think about it. And really don't think about it. Because when you think about it, it's contrary to surrender. And then you will see miracles happening. So apart from daily prayer, the other things which we should do for chronic stress to ensure that we are leading a stress-free life and don't suffer from chronic stress is to more and more practice surrender, where we put in our best efforts and then really hand it over to God.
You know, it's easy to talk about surrender to somebody who has been through the process a devotee goes through. You know, talk of surrender to you and me and people who know Swami is easy. But even otherwise, you know, going back to that analogy of a prey and a predator, given that situation, I think 90 out of 100 people would say that the zebra or the prey was more stressed than the lion. If you look at it logically, the reason is for the zebra it is do or die. Directly, the direct fallout of that chase is do or die, I mean live life or death after that. But for the lion, there is that element of hope. For it, it says that if I miss the zebra, maybe I can find another one.
Correct.
And that element of hope makes the stress lesser for the predator than the prey. I think that is a very important thing even for us when you're dealing with stress. Even if you're not having an entity called a divine being whom you can surrender to, this idea that, you know, there is hope. I mean, if this situation goes bad, there is another situation which will come and, you know, things will get better. That hope at every moment will also be a beautiful way of handling stress.
Beautifully would pray, because as I said that time, some of us call God, some of us call it hope, some of us call it whatever we may call it. Yes, that a kind of faith in a power greater than myself. That might be hope, that might be providence, whatever. But that definitely helps. So we now move on to another cause of stress. You know, this is now taking the discussion one more level deeper.
Okay.
We saw how in the baboons this kind of hierarchy causes stress. And we also saw the thing, it's anomalous in humans, because it is not always that a person on top of the hierarchy has stress, is stress-free, and a person at the bottom of the hierarchy is having stress. And one reason for that is a person at the bottom basically finds some way to be on top of the hierarchy in some other field, or is praying. You know, he's praying and that's why he's stress-free. Another cause for stress, because of the... why does the hierarchy cause stress? If we see, it's because a person who is lower down in the hierarchy is not enjoying the privileges and perks that the person higher in the hierarchy enjoys.
A feeling of deprivation.
And see, it might not be the fact that the bigger baboon bullies me. But you know, the bigger baboon can get massage done, can get the lice ticked off its body, can just sleep and just... I can't do it. I will never... The 15th baboon will never get massaged. And so you see, the 15th baboon will feel deprived of massaging, of grooming. And that feeling of deprivation, I want it, but I can't get it. That is another cause for chronic stress.
And bring it to humans, there's much more than getting your tics removed and being massaged.
Everything. The
innumerable number of desires and...
keeping up with the Joneses. I mean... We envy everything material, we envy relationships, we envy anything that the other person has, which we don't have, though we might have a lot of stuff which the other person doesn't have. You know, sometimes when you start comparing financial wealth, financial wealth, because wealth is not just finance. So financial wealth, when you compare, you forget the fact that you have a beautiful family, or you forget all the blessings that you have in life, and you look at only that one aspect. And that is what makes you stressed, in spite of the world considering that you have so much in life already. For that, you know, Mahatma Gandhi gives a talisman. And it was printed, I remember, in the first page of all our
NCERT textbooks.
NCERT, that is CBSE textbooks, right. Government textbooks. It would say that whenever you feel like you desire something in life, when you want something in life, close your eyes and think of the poorest man you have met in your life. And just think, will this improve his life or not? Will this desire, will this action of mine improve that person's life or not? If not, then what is the purpose of having it? And then you will find all your doubts, all your fears, all your frustrations disappearing on their own. Basically, what Mahatma Gandhi did was, instead of us comparing and trying to live up to the Joneses, he's making us compare ourselves to those who are less privileged than us and make us appreciate what God has given us. So, that is another way, you know, another way to combat stress. Stop comparing yourself with those whom you feel are above you in the ladder and compare yourself with those who are below you in the ladder. And this ladder can be anything. Financial ladder, career ladder, success ladder, relationship ladder, anything. Just compare with those who are below you in the ladder, and instead of stress and feelings of lack, what you will feel is gratitude and feelings of fulfillment.
In fact, that is exactly what Swami is telling in a discourse which I went through some time back. Swami is saying that all our problems is because we are always looking at the people above us. If we were to start looking at the people below us and are happy for what we have, that satisfaction which would come is something which is very spiritual. It's not material. And you know, that is the difference. The person who is deriving his happiness by looking up, or rather deriving his inspiration by looking up at those who are above him, is a man who is ambitious and who's going out there to achieve something. But if you want to be a spiritual man, if your achievements are in the spiritual zone, you have to look at down and then be satisfied. It's a different hierarchy altogether, the spiritual hierarchy.
Exactly. I remember, I think it was the Shivratri discourse of 2003 or 2002. I'm not getting the exact year. But Swami very powerfully says, he says, you don't get joy with the fulfillment of desire. You get joy by removal of the desire. You know, he says, because it is so evident, you know, the minute you fulfill a desire, it gives birth to another desire. You fulfill that desire, it gives birth to another desire, and there's no end to it. And so Swami says, fulfillment of desire doesn't give happiness. It is the removal of the desire that gives happiness, and that is why another beautiful tool that Swami has gifted to us to combat stress is this tool called ceiling on desires.
Absolutely. With something which is going to improve your level of contentment. You know, we are always talking of being... that's a very interesting thing, because when you're talking of hierarchy, you're talking about possessions. And you're putting the hierarchy only on the basis of possessions. The person right on top of that hierarchy is the one who has maximum possessions or maximum wealth. And the person down is the one who is having the least number of desires fulfilled. But what Swami says is actually the hierarchy is based on the level of contentment.
And that is why during the 50th birthday in 1975, in one of the discourses, Swami said, who is the richest man in the world? He who has least desires is the richest man. Who is the poorest man? He who has most desires is the poorest man in the world.
And now if you start putting things in this scale, you know, the whole hierarchy which you've talked about on the basis of richness can go, not necessarily reverses, but gets absolutely realigned to a different thing. And to be on top of that hierarchy is what essentially all spirituality is about.
To be contented.
To be contented and to be happy without needing any external impetus.
Exactly. And I remember, you know, when there was a meeting of so many economists in 2005 in Prashanthi Nilayam.
Right.
That time they realized that capitalism is not the way ahead for the world.
Okay.
So the problem is, yes, we agree that capitalism is having so many problems. The same problem, you know, of unfulfilled desires. There is no end to desires when we go to the capitalism model. And so there is no hope for any contentment. But the problem was, what is a substitute system? And I remember that time Professor G.V. gave a brilliant talk, a brilliant lecture, and I really hope it percolates to the entire world. In that talk, he was saying, socialism is not the alternative. Because he says the problem with socialism is it talks about equality in resources and wealth.
So forced equality.
And it'll never happen. You know, it's like you can't dig up Mount Everest, spread it all across India and hope to raise whole of India. Whole of India will go up only by an inch or so. But Professor G.V. was saying it's not about social equality, it's not about equality in possession, but equality in contentment. If all of us can be equally contented, it's enough. That is what the olden times, the kingdoms boasted of. The king, the barber, the prince, the fighters, the armies, everyone, all the people were equally contented. Because of which, the king and the rich people had no need to flaunt their wealth. You know, they didn't flaunt their wealth. And the poor people did not covet the wealth. Because everyone was equally contented. So you see, you had a society where there was the rich, the poor, the middle class, everything. But everybody is living in harmony and by helping each other because all are equally contented. So the point that I said all this because the point that you brought up about a hierarchy of contentment which comes by putting a ceiling on desires is so important to lead a stress-free life. So again, quickly going through the things we have gone through. The first thing we need for a stress-free life is daily prayer. Very important to set aside time for prayer, the most important time, and come what may, it should not get violated. The next thing that we spoke about is surrender. Surrendering to the Lord and doing our best and leaving the rest to Him. And the third thing that we have just now spoken about is ceiling on desires.
So going back to what we spoke of, the various ways we have to deal with acute stress. Mm. You know, we spoke of taking a shower, going out with a thing. You know, if you compare what we said then and what we have come to the conclusion now, the only difference is those symptomatic methods of dealing with, the symptomatic remedies which you had were all external. You're always looking for something outside to deal with your stress. You're looking for a pet, you're looking for a shower, you're looking for a game, you're looking for some company. These are all ways of looking outside. But what are the ones which will give you the lasting remedy are the ones of changing your within. And you talk of contentment, you talk of gratitude, you talk of surrender. These are all things which you tweak within you, not with something which is outside. So even if you're in the top of a mountain or in the depth of the sea, you will be able to handle your stress. You don't need pets, which you'll definitely not find in some situations.
Because prayer, ceiling on desires, and surrender are all three possible anywhere in the world, even if you have nobody else around you. And Prem, you know, it's just very so thrilling because there is one more method which, unconscious to us, Swami has ingrained in us, which is a very, very scientifically proven and best way to combat stress. And before I tell that method, you know, let me just tell the background behind this.
Okay.
These baboons that we were speaking about, you know, Robert Sapolsky's baboons, he studied them for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Prem, his whole life was about these baboons. Because he's getting all his readings and he's studying the different things about stress from these baboons.
Okay.
Then one year when he goes, he sees that this baboon society, from an average pack size of about 45, which it has maintained throughout the three decades, suddenly has got reduced to less than 20. Less than 20.
Okay.
And when he investigates, he finds out that there was this tourist camp that had been set up where they left the meat carelessly around and this meat had got infected with tuberculosis.
Okay.
And the baboons are non-vegetarians and they have all had this meat. And it has resulted in more than 50% of these baboons getting wiped out. And he was almost in tears.
That would be a disaster for a scientist who's been studying it for 30 years.
Exactly.
Right?
And he confesses in the documentary that apart from the scientific value, you can't not get attached to something you have been with for 30 years.
Right.
He was very close to this baboon pack, I mean in his heart. He was devastated. But then came the revelation of his life, he says. I mean, it was such a revealing thing and it has thrilled him and thrills me also as I tell that. You know, Prem, we spoke about those baboons that were highly stressed out and highly susceptible and they are going to live a very short life. And we spoke about those top baboons which are healthy and fit. Now, can you make a guess as to which were the baboons that got wiped out? Number 1 or number 15? I mean, the bullies or the one that is getting bullied?
I think going by the health-wise, the ones on top were the most healthy, right? So they should have been the maximum primed to handle a situation like this.
Congrats, you're thinking like Robert Sapolsky. That is what he expected. Then he saw that all the top baboons are dead.
I mean the ones on the right on top?
Right on top, which are the healthiest. And the ones that have led a stressed life throughout are the ones that are the survivors.
Okay.
And most of the females have survived.
Now after
the females have never bullied.
Now after 1.5 hours, you're trying to tell us that stress is good and go and lead a stressful life then.
No, that is not what I'm telling him. Because before he could get misguided onto this track, he met up with another researcher, a lady researcher,
okay,
who was researching on another stressed group. This was a group of mothers who had children with several birth defects, mental or physical.
Okay.
You know, severe defects which make them heavily dependent even after they grow up on the mothers.
That be immense physical and psychological stress.
Yes, for the mothers. Because, you know,
to have an unhealthy child is such a psychological stress. And the mother has to do so much more for that disabled child.
Yes, so these mothers had exceptionally high stress levels. So this lady was monitoring all that. And then something interesting happened in her study also. These mothers, they happen to meet each other and they're having common problems, right? They're having the common kind of... So right. They started coming together and talking to each other about their problems. And as they talk to each other, you know, they pour out their woes. They cry. They say, you know, this is what is happening to my child. You know, why is this? I don't understand. They cry. And the other mothers there in the group are able to understand the pain of this mother. Mm-hmm. So they console her and they confess their own pain. So a kind, and this started growing and it finally became a group of about 15 to 20 mothers who come together once in a while and pour out their pain, discuss, and they do all this. Okay. Slowly also, because of their common condition, they also developed a kind of dark sense of humor where they were able to laugh at their own situations, crack jokes, because now it doesn't appear demeaning because all of you are in the same boat, right?
Right.
So it became a very pally, very close-knit group where each one supports the other. Just like how we have Alcoholic Anonymous, Addictions Anonymous and everything. It is also an anonymous group of all mothers who now know each other so well. And then to her shock, this researcher found that opposite of stress effects are being seen in these women. You know, they are showing reduced blood pressure. And she naturally said this happens because of dopamines, which are positive chemicals, which are created, which are happiness-causing chemicals.
Okay.
Because of you sharing and you caring and you showing empathy with each other, you showing sympathy for each other, you basically you are loving and caring for each other, and that is what led to a transformation in the physiological properties of each of these women. And when he got to know this research, then it struck Robert Sapolsky. You know, what were all these bullied baboons doing? They were all the time grooming and massaging. Basically, though enforced, they were definitely taking care of others. And he came up to the conclusion that whether done voluntarily or with force, when you care for others and serve others, you are able to beat the effects of stress. Oh my God, my hair stand on their end. Realizing the impact and magnitude of this discovery. Now you see, when Swami says it's compulsory that all of you go and do Gram Seva. You know, whether you curse and tell, what is this? This is such a tough thing. And whether you curse and serve others. Of course, when you do it with all your heart, you enjoy the maximum benefits. But even if you do it unwillingly, caring for others, helping others and serving others destroys the effect of stress and contributes to well-being and happiness in your life. Isn't that a magnificent discovery?
Amazing. You know, that's... it would take immense effort for Swami to tell the whole baboon research and tell us to do, you know, seva. But that's what Swami did. Swami promised us that this is going to make you lead a better life. But it's very, very interesting to know that scientific research has empirically proved that that's true.
And he also, you know, Swami also, what he did was, he linked up these different things. You know, he told us to pray. And he said, when you pray, not only will you be happy, God will be happy. And if you want to make God happy, do seva. You know, dina dukhiyon se prem karo, mera sai prasanna hoga. You know, he linked up all these things that we talk about, that is, sealing on desires, prayer to God, surrender to God, and serving and doing seva to others. All these four, Swami interlinked them in so many ways. When you do service, you do it with love for others, you care for others, and do that, but at the same time do it so that God is happy. Do it only to please Swami. You know how he interlinks all these things so beautifully. We just have to follow these words of Swami, and there, hey presto, you have a solution for chronic stress. And today when I think of it, why is it that I am not stressed, or why is it that you are not stressed? It's because, Prem, you and me, by default, have been just, you know, like mechanically, on autopilot, we have just been by default doing what Swami has said, and so it has become so stress-free. Really, I wonder at the stress levels of others and wonder how is it that they are getting so stressed, and we realize that there is so much benefit in doing what Swami says, even if we don't understand it.
And I think whatever we've spoken of now is to deal with day-to-day stress. You know, there will still be acute stress, and there will still be moments when you are pushed into acute stress. Mm. But the problem is that chronic stress, where we have taken living with stress as a norm.
As a way of life.
Right. And these things which you said, you know, which we've discussed now, prayer, surrender, and having hope, and doing, caring for others, being a caregiver, all these manage most of that day-to-day stress which we take on ourselves without our knowledge, and we think we have to live with it.
Hmm.
And when you are in a better position to deal with chronic stress, you are also in a better position to deal with acute stress.
Whenever they occur.
When you're in the moment when suddenly you're in a very, very stressful situation, because you've handled chronic stress, you know, all through your life, you are in a much better place and position even to handle acute stress.
Well put, Prem. Just because this talk, as I said, you know, this part of this, there are so many new insights that you have added. But a part of this was given as a talk yesterday. So, and it was to school children. So I will follow that same kind of summing up, because just in case those who missed the entire discussion, the four beautiful tools that Swami has given in our hands to combat stress in the long run, so that we forget the meaning of stress. One is prayer. Two, surrender. Three, sealing on desires. And fourth, final, most beautiful, and a way that all of us should get engaged in, is caring for others, sharing and serving others. Seva. So these four are sure shot methods, and dear listeners, both Prem and myself can speak with confidence in our hearts, because by default, by Swami's grace and love, we have been made to do these things, and we have seen the results of how beautiful life it leads to. Of course, there may be many more ways of battling stress and combating stress. In our limited understanding, with prayers to Swami, with what he inspired, this is what we presented in this afternoon satsang. Your feedback is definitely welcome. Who doesn't want to make the world less stressful? So you can write to us at listener@radiosai.org.
Thank you for being with us, listeners. On behalf of all of you, on behalf of us sitting here, we offer this satsang at Swami's lotus feet. As Arvind said, we are eagerly looking forward to your feedback. In a short while from now, Chandu will be here for his segment, Love to Love. Once again, thanking you all for being with us. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and with me is Arvind. Till we meet you next week, 12:30 on Thursday, this is Prem and Arvind signing off. Sai Ram.
तेरे चरणों में आके क्या तेरा पाके जीवन हमको साई आनंद मिला सलागे तेरे चरणों में आके प्यार तेरा पाके जीवन हमको साई आनंद मिला सलागे तेरे प्यार की अमृत धारा में भीगे जीवन सारा तेरे प्यार की अमृत धारा में भीगे जीवन सारा तेरे चरणों में आके प्यार तेरा पाके जीवन हमको साई आनंद मिला सलागे आनंद